Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to Renee's Heart to Heart. This is Renee. Thanks for coming by today. Today is Bullies to Buddies Day. And if you join the show regularly, you know that we talk about the workbook that I work out of that was given to me by Israel Kalman. And he used to be on the show once a week, and then he got so busy that his time doesn't permit it. So he's been in Florida, and I went to one of his seminars, and I was lucky enough to receive one of his workbooks. So we go through it chapter by chapter, and last week we talked about all the principles that work and some that don't work that are involved in the way we treat bullying. Now, I'm annoyed with myself about something today because last week a good friend, Barry Holliff, sent me an article from the Sun Sentinel, and it was about the long-term effects of being a bullied young person. And it talked about the mental health of somebody who is continually bullied. And there has been some research and some discussion in our colleges and our universities that study these things. And they do see a connection. However, I saved the article to my homepage, and it has disappeared, which happens on Facebook, sadly. Gets replaced with something that I don't even care about, or 15 recipes that somebody sent to me, and they can come up in triplicate. So I guess I shouldn't depend so much on the professionalism of Facebook or my ability to keep it the way it's supposed to be. So in the future, I will copy these articles when somebody sends them to me. I got so much paper piled up around me since we've been doing the show that I've been trying not to do so much of that. I have three small file cabinets that are just full of paperwork that I have studied and researched. So, at any rate, I apologize for that. I will continue to see if I can locate that. I went into the Sun Sentinel archives and couldn't find the story either. But, of course, it makes perfect sense to me. If you are 13, 14, 15 years old, and you go through a horrific amount of bullying for whatever reasons, all the things we talk about. Maybe you've got a bad case of teen acne, or maybe you've still not gotten rid of your baby fat, or maybe you're taller than everybody in the class. Who knows? But you get picked on relentlessly. And I guess they've done some testing and some research and realized that that has a lot longer term effects than anybody ever realized. So I do want to find that and share that with all of you, because maybe you're seeing the effects of those things now with somebody that you're close to. So it'd be good for us to understand it a little bit better. So I'm going to bring Shell in so we can talk about the workbook. And I want everybody to know that even though there's a lot of attention on bullying, and even this morning, early this morning when I tried to search for that article, I was blown away by all the different things that are still out there and all the different things that are still taking place and the kids that are being beaten on school buses and the bus drivers that watch and the teachers that actually play a part in it. I keep thinking it's getting better. But it isn't. It's still very much a part of our lives. So we need to keep talking about it and hopefully do something about it. Good morning, Michelle.
Well, good morning, Renee. How are you doing?
I'm pretty good. I seem to have kind of a stuffy nose this morning. I think it's because my cat has decided that her favorite place now is to lay on top of my computer. So when I come in here in the morning, I have to dust everything off, and I think I flared up a little kitty cat allergy going in my nose this morning. But other than that, I'm good. How about you?
I'm doing pretty good. Been hectic the last couple of days. A lot of family stuff going on. All good stuff, but it's been very, you know, it's been kind of hectic pace for me. So we had gone to the beach on Sunday. And I got a little extra sun, so I'm feeling it myself a little bit too. But it was good. It was a fun day.
I love to go to the beach. We don't do it often enough. Definitely don't do it often enough. It's like a big deal because I always want to include everybody. So that usually means organizing three cars and all that kind of stuff. So we are up to principle number 6. In the workbook, and it is called Turn the Other Cheek. Now, turn the other cheek always sounds like you are being pushed around again. And a lot of people that have lived a life of bullying and being picked on or being the underdog are not good with that. And the reason they're not is because they feel like they should be standing up for themselves. And I agree with that. I think Shelley and I both agree with standing up for yourself. But you have to learn how to choose your battles. And sometimes it's not worth the battle. Sometimes it's worth it a lot. And other times it's not worth it at all. This is what he's written for this. This rule is hard for many people to accept. Even devout Christians who revere Jesus, the originator of Turn the Other Cheek, saying, most people think it means we just let ourselves be losers and let them get away with it when others attack us. And indeed, I think that is a big consensus. Turning the other cheek is not a recipe for losing. It's actually a recipe for creating win-win situations and prevents the creation of a cycle of violence. Turning the other cheek is probably intended for situations in which someone is trying to humiliate us or provoke us into a fight. It may not apply when crazed or hate-filled people are actually looking to injure or kill us, regardless of our behavior. Now, I hope everybody gets that. In other words, if you feel like your welfare is in jeopardy, he's not trying to tell you that just, you know, you should stand there and take a beating. That's not what turn the other cheek means. Turning the other cheek is a prescription for personal behavior. It cannot serve as a guiding principle in the courts of law. Turn the other cheek is the solution to physical bullying. Principle number 7, do not judge. Oh, boy, here's one of our favorites. Traditional psychology, do not judge. Say that again?
Don't you think we should talk about 6 a little bit more? Because that was a little convoluted for me.
Okay, what do you want to say about it?
Well, I think that I don't want people to misunderstand. I mean, you read his description on it, but again, when we're talking about turning the other cheek, we're not talking about if you're being physically attacked. When we're talking about a criminal act, that's not bullying
right.
anymore. And I have to always keep
right.
reemphasizing that in case we have new callers or somebody like that. But if you're being physically, he's not saying that if somebody's attacking you, you shouldn't defend yourself. You know, if you're being mugged or something like that. He's talking about in true bullying situations, somebody's being unkind to you, somebody's saying mean things to you. He's talking about turning the other cheek in more of a theoretical way. You're not actually being slapped in the face. You're being slapped in the face with words. And he's saying turn the other cheek in a way that you don't react. You're letting the other person know that their words aren't hurting you, aren't injuring you, aren't upsetting you. you're okay with what they're saying, and you're still in a good frame of mind, and you still have a sense of kindness towards them. And that response to people is usually very surprising, and it kind of disarms them. It demotivates them from wanting to move forward with that behavior anymore. But the turn the other cheek that he's talking about is a theoretical one. It's not an actual where somebody slapped you and then you're turning your other cheek. This is in words. This is turning the other cheek to words, and when people are taunting you or being mean or saying cruel things, that kind of thing. So that's what he's talking about. He's not talking about if somebody's physically attacking you that you're not supposed to defend yourself.
No, honey, that's what I just read. Turning the other cheek is probably intended for situations in which someone is trying to humiliate us or provoke us into a fight. It may not apply when crazed or hate-filled people are actually looking to injure or kill us, regardless of our behavior.
Right.
And that's pretty clear cut. It's not about standing there and letting somebody, beat the hell out of you. That's not what it's about. It means having a good sense about you and realizing that somebody's standing there saying things that you know aren't true, and that you know he's just trying to entice you into an argument. You say, oh, whatever, my friend, and turn around and walk away. That's the kind of turning the cheek that he's talking about. There's no reason to give in to somebody else's poor behavior. Then you're standing right beside him instead of in front of him. So
exactly.
I thought his words were pretty clear on that. I hope nobody else misunderstands that, because that isn't what he's saying. And like you said, it's not about, any kind of physical harm. And we say this over and over again. Physical harm, laying of hands on you, is a criminal offense. It's no longer really bullying. It's a misdemeanor or a felony. So we would never be advocates of you standing there and let somebody pummel on you. Never. Principle number 7 is do not judge. And like I said, we talk a lot about judgmentality, and we talk about it's not always so easy to not judge. And I've shared a couple stories about myself. I catch myself making judgment calls on somebody's appearance, and then I chastise myself because that's not who I want to be. But I do catch myself. So I know that if I catch myself, the rest of us are, the rest of you, the rest of all of us are doing the same thing. It's something that we really need to pay close attention to, because judgmentality can send you down the wrong road.
Right.
In so many ways. So he writes, traditional psychology as well as religious and ethical systems advises people not to judge. Few people, though, take this seriously. Parents and teachers regularly play judge in the disputes between children, and the anti-bullying laws are forcing adults to judge. Judging is a very serious business and should not be undertaken lightly. It should only be done when absolutely necessary and should be left to trained legal authorities. Now, let me say about that. Those are smart words, I think, and they certainly should be heeded, but sometimes that's not available. And sometimes you're in a situation where if you don't step up, somebody's really going to get hurt. So let's talk a little bit for a minute about how you could actually intervene in a situation where you see somebody else is going to get hurt without a lot of judgmentality. How do you think that would work, Shelley? How do you think you could intervene? Let's use the ever-famous couple scenario, because it's one of the toughest ones out there, and I think each one of us that are adults at one time or another have intervened between close friends, a husband and wife, or boyfriend and girlfriend, and thought we could help. And if you try to do it without judgment, that would be wonderful, and that would hopefully have a good outcome. But what usually happens when you intervene in a couple show?
Well, 9 times out of 10, when you intervene, you have in your head already, you know, you've already characterized somebody as wrong and somebody is right. Somebody is being mean and somebody is being victim. And you're going in there to try to protect the victim and get the, you know, to get the mean person, the villain, to stop acting in a particular way. And generally what happens, because as we've learned from this, both people at that particular moment feel like they're the victim of the other. And without understanding that, you've now just further injured the person, regardless of whether or not they are being mean or anything else. You have to understand you don't know what their motivation is. You don't know what is in their mind making them lash out and say mean things or whatever. So when you step in there to try and help and you're being judgmental and you've labeled them and they pick up on that, all it does is add fuel to the fire. It makes them more angry because now they have two people that they feel are victimizing them. And it just causes a vicious cycle. So that's one scenario that I can see playing out, is that in your attempt to help, you're actually making things worse.
Mm-hmm. Well, and very often with a couple, if an outside party intervenes, both partners gang up against the person that's trying to help. They seldom allow you to step in and do something to their significant other or their best friend
point.
Or their boyfriend or girlfriend.
Right, right. That's a very good point.
Yeah. You think you're being a buddy. You think you're calming them down, and they get offended, especially if you try to take a side. So my advice in that regard... What has always, you know, I ran a bar, and I've tended bar, and of course that's one of the biggest opportunities for a couple to have a disagreement, is when they're drinking and partying with other people and stuff happens and there's any number of, you know, extenuating circumstances. So what I found worked for me is we would like tag team a couple. And by that I mean one of us would take the girlfriend or wife, one of us would take the husband or the boyfriend and commiserate with them a little bit, but not, you know, not embarrass the, not make the person we're trying to help feel like they have to stick up for their significant other, because just because they're fighting doesn't mean they don't still love each other.
Right,
so
of course.
Best for us in the scenario that I'm talking about is I would take the wife and say, oh, he's just having a good time. This is what's going on. You know, let's talk and maybe change the subject. And then Spike would do the same thing with the husband. And that very often would have the best results for us. But intervening in, I always feel sorry when we watch, every now and then the kids will put on Cops. And when they have to go to a domestic dispute, it is the worst. The worst.
Oh. Yep.
I mean, I've seen wives jump on Cops' backs and hit them with baseball bats and all of the above when they're the ones who called because they're having a fight with their husband. So it's a very, very difficult scenario. So one of the big rules he writes in this chapter is whenever we act as judge between two people, we make them hate each other even more, and one side ends up hating us too.
I think
that's a true statement, quote, whatever you want to call it. So you have to really be careful. But I want to make clear that I believe that we should never walk away when we think there's the opportunity for somebody to get hurt. There are no excuses for you to walk away when you see... somebody posted a video the other day, a woman slapping. I mean slapping. The head, the face, the shoulders, the upper part of a body of a baby. Not an infant, but like maybe 8 months old, 6 to 8 months old. And this man took a video with his camera phone instead of stopping her. And I was so torn. I'm telling this story right now and envisioning what I saw gives me goosebumps.
Oh, wow.
I was like, I was glad the woman was caught, and I was glad that the baby was okay, and I was glad about all those things. But I couldn't get past the fact for several seconds he allowed this woman to abuse this child and took a freaking video.
Well, what did he do with the video? I mean, what did he do? He posted it, or he went to the authorities with it?
He did both.
Both.
It was posted by one of the newspapers, and because I do all of it to the bus stop. Yeah. And but I was like, what the hell is he doing? Why is he standing? You know.
Right.
I mean, I understand that he wanted to prove in case somebody didn't believe him, but it was a long video, Shelley. And then she picked up the baby, and she's like, the baby's like a rag doll.
Oh.
I have nightmares about it. That's the second video somebody has sent me like that I cannot erase from my mind's eye. And
Was there any follow-up on the condition of the baby or what was done, or it's just the video?
All that was that the baby was okay, and that the female in the picture was incarcerated in jail.
Action taken then, good.
There was action taken, but there was no... I mean, he could have stopped half a dozen of those slaps.
Wow.
You know, I mean, he could have been walking towards her while he's taking the video to stop her. I just, you know, I just question, I guess everybody's different, you know, and I guess everybody looks at things in a different way. But that really upset me, and I thought to myself, now there's an opportunity for you to really do something that nobody would ever question. It's not like intervening in a fist fight between two men or a husband and wife where there's going to be your story, my story, and the truth.
Yeah, but she's a woman, he's a guy. What if she said he attacked her and then it's her word against his word? I mean, it's almost necessary now to film everything because that's the only thing that's incontrovertible. You know, you go in there, and if it was a woman, she could have gotten away, but a man approaching a woman holding a baby, it's like all she has to do is scream that he attacked her, and it's like he hurt her baby or something. I've seen stuff like this happen on some of these court shows, and the stories are so different, but somebody caught it on film, and the actual perpetrator wasn't aware of it, and then they get shocked in court because all of a sudden now somebody actually caught them in the act, and they didn't know it, you know. And but it's like I can see that maybe that was the reason why he was filming it. He probably also didn't know it was going to go on for as long as it did, even though it was only seconds by what you're describing. But it's at least he did act on it. But I can almost kind of understand why a man wouldn't want to approach a woman. I think a woman would have just gone in there, motherly instinct and all that. But at least he had enough of an instinct to capture it, you know. But it's different with a man approaching a woman because a woman can always say that the man was doing something wrong, and the only saving grace was that he did get it on film.
Well, let me say this, and think about this for a minute before you answer. Don't you believe that somebody who's committing an act like that, if she knew she was being watched, she'd stop. If he came towards her with the phone up in her face, saying, "Lady, what are you doing? What the hell are you doing?" You don't think she'd stop?
No.
Really?
No. No, no. I've seen people like that, and sometimes they get more angry that you're questioning their right to do whatever they're doing to their kids, and sometimes they even get more violent. I actually saw that happen in, I think it was a Walmart once. Somebody questioned, it wasn't me, I watched it happen between two other people, and she yanked her, I thought she was going to break her kid's arm. You know, who the hell are you to tell me how to treat my children? And she yanked this kid, and the other person followed up, and they were on the phone with the police. They were calling 911. It actually made her more angry.
Mm-hmm.
So, no, it's if somebody's in that place already, where they would smack their child like that in public, they're not okay. They're not in control of themselves. They're not acting rationally. And if you confront them even in a very passive way, it's going to incite them more. It does not calm them down. Because how can she not realize she's out in public doing that to her child and that people are going to see her? So, no, at that point, they're disconnected. They're not even aware that there's eyes on them. And if they do realize that there are judgmental eyes on them, it's going to make them even more angry because they're not right at that moment. That's not normal behavior. You know, you're not talking about who's rational that would be embarrassed. This is somebody who's not connected at that moment. Just to be able to do that to your own child isn't normal. Think about it.
Yes, I don't. This video was not like in the middle of a Walmart. There were not a whole bunch of people watching her. She was not in a mall. She was like under some trees in like a parking lot. I don't think she thought anybody could see what she was doing. So she was not doing it. I dare say the video that I saw, if that had taken place in a Walmart, I think a 10-year-old would have approached and said, "What are you doing?" I mean, that's how awful it was.
Well, I mean, the guy had to be fairly close. You know, phones aren't like cameras. They don't have, you know, you don't have like extreme zoom. He had to be close enough to see what she was doing. So she wasn't in that certain area if this guy was in her eye shot.
You couldn't see anything but the action. You couldn't make out whether the baby was a boy or a girl, really how big it was. You couldn't make out anything about her. He was far enough away, and he was behind her. So, you know, she didn't know he was coming. My point was that if he had time to shoot the video, and maybe he was walking towards her. I don't know because you don't see the very end of it. But I would have been, I don't know, maybe today I would have thought of taking the video, but I would have been on my way over there to stop.
Well, like you said, he may have been. It's hard to tell. I don't know, you have the whole story. But the bottom line is he did do the right thing. He didn't see it and get this discussion and walk away. He did something with what he thought.
That's important. Right, right. So when we judge the disputes between our children at home, it creates endless sibling rivalry. And we've had shows about sibling rivalry. We've had lots of discussion. We've had people talk on the show who felt, girls who thought that their brothers could do anything and their brothers would be mean to them and mom and dad would just, you know, yell and then nothing ever changed. So it is an issue in a home with a lot of kids. If we do marriage counseling and judge the disputes between the couple, they will probably never come back to see us again. And when school staff judge the disputes between students, the disputes intensify as each side and their parents try to get the school on their side. You can see how this just snowballs into a big mess.
Right.
Maimonides, the preeminent Jewish philosopher of the Middle Ages, wrote 800 years ago, the sages of old were extremely reluctant to be appointed as judges. They avoided sitting in judgment unless they were sure there was no one else as qualified as they, and that the judicial system would collapse if they did not serve. Even then, they only sat in judgment when the community and the elders pressured them, pleading with them to accept the appointment. So it is tough. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. And, of course, that's why it's so important to have the laws not be so antiquated, because if you are in a courtroom and if you follow any proceedings, the judge is in one hell of a hot seat. Let's face it, especially not when you're talking about who owes the $500 for borrowing a car and wrecking it or all the things that we see on Judge Judy or any of those. And sometimes they do those that are pretty, you know, pretty important, and there needs to be a really, really good judgment made in the favor of someone else. But if you step into criminal courts and you realize that the person sitting up there has the ability to take away the freedom of a person or persons, or to make a judgment call in the guilt or the innocence of someone, I can't imagine being a judge and listening to a whole trial and then having the jury come back tied or deadlocked or unable to, you know, to make a call.
Mm-hmm.
Then
right.
It's, you know, it's either, I mean, there's several different things the judge can do after that. And in most cases, they call it a mistrial and everybody has to start from square one again. But sometimes they've exhausted all the efforts in a courtroom. Look at the case that we have going on here in Florida right now, the John Goodman case.
Oh, wow.
He's not going to have any money left. I can't imagine that he's going to have any money left, because this has to have cost him a small fortune fighting for his freedom. But the truth of the matter is, would a man with limited funds still be on the outside? I don't think so.
No, absolutely not.
So you can, you know, of course we know this anyway, no matter what subject we're talking about, money wields power, big power, and it is your right. If you can get new counsel, if you can get somebody, anybody, to spend their time and energy to dig up something, an old precedent, an old law, an old court ruling that can help them, then, and that's what this dude's doing. I mean, and he's not even, the last I knew, I don't even think he was incarcerated anymore. I think he's maybe on house arrest or something, but he can conduct business and everything.
Wow.
So
I know.
You know, your person without that kind of cash flow would have been put away, you know. Well, and look at the...
But then again, when you're talking criminal acts, unfortunately, and I know even in the, you know, even in ancient times, it was uncomfortable for the people there were, for these men. They didn't want to be in judge anyway. So when you're coming to criminal acts, you almost have to make judgment calls, because you have a clear-cut perpetrator and victim. You know, if you were mugged, if you were robbed, if your car was stolen, I mean, these are criminal acts. So their judgment sort of comes into play. I think whereas he's talking about not judging people is in human behavior. Somebody was mean to you, and you've judged them as a mean person, okay, when meanwhile maybe they're just having a bad day. So if we don't go into judging people because of bad or rude behavior, you know, somebody cut you off on the street and all of a sudden you, in your head, you're calling them some four-letter word, you know, don't go there. Maybe they're having a bad day. Maybe they just found out that a loved one is in the hospital and they're not thinking. They're trying to get to the hospital in a rush. you know. But the minute we see somebody speeding around us, the minute we see somebody being a little rude, we judge them in that moment. They're an idiot. They're a jerk. They're speeding around. They're driving like a lunatic. Meanwhile, you have no idea. You don't know this person. You don't know what's going on in their lives. You don't know what's making them act the way they are. Yet instantly you judge them. And that's what we have to stop doing. If people would be a little bit more compassionate and understanding and always give the other individual the benefit of the doubt that maybe there's a reason they're acting not at their best and that maybe this isn't the way they act all the time, you'd find a lot more of these situations that would kind of resolve themselves in a very, very light way, instead of getting more accelerated. I mean, you have road rage. It's a perfect example, okay? All right, one person cuts another person off. Maybe they did it. You know, they were distracted. They weren't thinking. They were in a rush for, like, what I just said or something like that. And then they catch up at the light, and they're screaming and yelling at each other. Now they're both aggravated, okay? They're flipping each other off. Then, and you also see this, then they go on, and then the other person cuts off the first person, you know, and then it becomes, now it becomes hazardous for everybody around them because neither one can control themselves. Where, like the story I told that day when I accidentally cut that guy off, or he thought I did, I didn't. There was an extra lane there, I guess he didn't see, and I moved into it, and he thought I cut him off, but I really didn't. And when we got to the light, he's screaming at me, he's giving me the finger and all this. I rolled my window down, and I'm laughing. And I said, I didn't cut you off back there. I said, I can see how upset you are. I said, don't be upset. I said, we didn't do anything to each other. And I said, I really would like you to have a good day. This is exactly what I said to him. And when he saw that I was laughing, he started laughing. And he apologized. And he goes, I don't know why I got so upset. I said, it's kind of what happens in the road. But I said, have a good day. And he goes, yeah, I will. And he waved at me and he drove off. And it got diffused just that easily. But what if I had judged him as being a jerk or all these other things, the way he was judging me, all right, and just went along with it? He and I both would have been angry and would have been driving on the road around other innocent people still angry, and we could have created more havoc on the road. But because I chose not to engage that, put him in a better place, we both continued our morning in a really good mood.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's certainly the way it can be, that's for sure. And sometimes if you're the bigger person, like Shelley just said, and just look at somebody and smile and say, God, you know, I see that you're annoyed and you must feel like I did this and that's not what I meant to do. Or even if you accept responsibility, you know, it's really no skin off your nose. And
right.
Sometimes it's the, you know, I get people saying that to me all the time. Why are you, my grandchildren in particular, why are you always so nice to everybody, Grandma? I said, because it makes Grandma happy. That's why. It's not about the other people so much as it is about my own well-being. And everybody thinks I'm being nice just because I'm trying to be a good person. Well, I'd like to think that's true as well. But the real truth is I'm a lot happier when I'm happy. If
right.
I'm not finding fault in somebody else or being negative about something or being angry or pissed about something that I can't change anyway, I'm a lot happier if I just say, whatever, okay. Well, you can't fight every battle that comes in your face. You purely and simply cannot. And you need to save the energy for the times when you do need to fight. And
right.
I'm a big of that because stuff does happen, and sometimes you need a lot of extra strength. And if you use it on a daily basis for every piddly little thing that comes across your plate, by the time something big comes across, somebody said to me when I said this to him one day, I just happened to think of it, they said, yeah, but what about the fact that if I'm pissed about everything, I got a lot of practice, so when something bad happens, I really know what I'm doing.
Oh, my God, that's hilarious.
Made me laugh. You know, I never thought of it. Like, maybe you're the right one and I'm the wrong one. I don't know.
It's funny.
So,
that's funny.
Yeah. It is.
But the whole thing is that the comment you made, that's very funny, but it also shows something, is that people think they're being confronted with battles all the time when they're really not. It's also what we make of a situation. You know, just because somebody's approaching you in an aggressive or hostile way, and again, I'm talking words, I'm talking attitude, I'm not talking somebody with their fists raised, okay? But if somebody's approaching you in a confrontational way, you can choose to engage it or not. And it amazes me that, and I guess I was there at one time in my life too, okay? But it does still amaze me that people will choose to match that energy and go into the confrontation instead of trying to like calm the situation down. And I mean, I got a handle on that a little bit earlier on in life, but there was a time that I would be mad at the drop of a hat. I would be ready to take somebody's head off. I just didn't like being confronted, you know, and I would try to nip it in the bud. And I'll be honest with you, life is a lot more fun when you maintain control of yourself. People need to understand, when you give in to anger, you're losing control. People think they're gaining control. You're not. When you give in to anger and you allow that rage to build up in you, that messes with your brain chemistry and you're no longer thinking clearly. If you can maintain yourself calm, all right, you stay in control. The calmer you stay, the more in control you are. Look at people when they fight. All right, I mean, they turn into idiots. I'm not trying to be insulting, but they really do. Neither one of them are listening to each other anymore. They can't hear the conversation. They don't even have a clue what the other person is saying. They're screaming at each other, and a lot of times they act very foolish. They just, you know, it almost like disconnects the logical part of the brain when you give into that rage. You're no longer thinking rationally, you know. Look at every, look at all the superheroes and the martial artists and stuff. They're always very calm, and no matter what's going on around them, they stay very calm, cool, and collected, and they always win over their adversaries that are going nuts and that are being threatening and that are, you know, angry and all this. And it's always the person that's calm, cool, and collected that ends up being the hero, that ends up, you know, saving the day, because in that moment they're in complete control. And it's actually something that they teach in martial arts, is that the calmer you can stay, the more in control of the situation you stay. When you give in to anger, you're actually putting yourself at more risk, because then you stop thinking clearly.
And I think taking, well, that goes back to the old story about telling my sister, you know, say something to yourself and it makes you mad, don't say it to anybody else, or if it hurts your feelings, saying it to anybody else. And if she just looked at me and was like, what, are you crazy? You do that with everything you say? And I remember laughing to myself and thinking, do I do that with everything I say? And I thought to myself, I guess I kind of do. So, but I still believe in that, and I still believe that that's the best way to treat yourself, not just others.
But, you know, I know other people, it's funny when you tell that story about Barbara, because I know a couple other people that are exactly like that. They think that being, you know, like watching their words, thinking about how they say things and how people, in fact, they really do think it's a waste of time. They just want to go on life having this knee-jerk reaction to everything, and meanwhile, they're always having problems in their interactions with other people and stuff, and it's everybody else. It has nothing to do with them. And it just cracks me up that people, a lot of times, can't look internally. They can criticize everybody around them, make all these judgment calls on other people, and yet they can never turn that focus back on themselves to realize that they're playing a role in how they're treated by other people.
Mhm. Mhm. Well, you're right. A lot of people don't see that. They don't. They only see what's happening to them, not what they're doing back. But
right.
Let's move on to this. Because this is very similar, and we've already kind of started talking about it without being into this part of it. Principle number 8, which is an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth, or the punishment must fit the crime. The eye for an eye principle is found in the Old Testament and is widely misunderstood. It is generally thought to be a barbaric prescription for personal revenge and is often contrasted with the more enlightened New Testament principle of turning the other cheek. An eye for an eye is found in the sections of the Bible that give instructions to judges for punishing criminals. It is strictly meant for courts of law, not for taking personal revenge. The Bible commands people not to take revenge. Turning the other cheek cannot be a policy for dealing with crime. Would you go to a court where the judge rules that when someone has committed a crime against you, you should let them do it again? No, of course not. Punishment has several goals. The following are three of the most important. To be a deterrent to crime, to make the criminal pay for the damage he did, to make restitution, to reform lawbreakers by making them feel remorse for their crime and realize the wrongfulness of their action so that they won't want to do it again. Those three things can be put on any level. You know what I mean by that? That can be, those three rules of thumb can apply to many, many things that we do in this lifetime, not just actions of wrongdoing or crime. But obviously to not do anything that you think is wrong is smart. And obviously if you are in a position where you know somebody else has done something wrong, they need to make restitution, and you know that. And we also need to have actions that teach people right from wrong. If you continually do something wrong, you're going to get in trouble. So these laws apply to two-year-olds. I'd like everybody to remember that when you teach a child not to touch something hot, you're doing that so that they don't get burnt. Well, that premise can follow you through your whole life. And it can be, you know, it's not verbatim, but every time you teach somebody or help somebody understand that every time they do something wrong, they get burnt, it eventually sinks in. Now, there's no, you know, I'm not talking about your little hand getting burnt. I'm talking about you getting burnt. So if we can get that point across to young people and let them understand that there are certain things that they're just not supposed to do, because eventually, even if they don't get hurt at the onset, the repercussions will cause them some harm. That's the whole point that he's trying to make, and that's the whole thing that we're trying to teach all of us, the whole world. A lot of times people get away with things. I remember when I was 11 years old, I stole something from a Newberry's or a Frederick's or something. It was like this huge department store, very inexpensive department store. Me and my girlfriends always went in there. And they had those little tiny fake stone rings that bent and everything. I mean, I think they were like $6 in the store. And I put one in my hand, and it was my intention to buy it. And I put one in my hand, and I was carrying it around in my hand, and I eventually put it on my pinky. And we're all walking through the store and everything, and I'm thinking about this ring, and something happened, and I walked out of the store with the ring on my hand. It was too easy. It was way too easy. So you have to know I did it again. And I probably stole like three times from that same store because it was just so easy. The first time, purely by accident, but I didn't get burnt, you see. So I did it again. And I did it the third time. And the third time, I'm walking out of the store and I bought something. And I put something else in the bag this time. And as I'm walking out, I see one of the girls that I'm in school with. I'm in sixth grade. And this man has a hold of her arm. He caught her stealing lipstick. And she was crying. And they were saying they were going to call her mother and they were going to call the police. And I was mortified. Mortified, Shelley. I can't ever remember being quite as scared as I was that day.
Wow.
But I never stole again. So you know, it made a big, it ran the point home for me totally. But prior to that, when I kept getting away with it, I was going to do it until I get caught. You see?
Mm-hmm.
How dumb we can be.
That's on TV right now, Scared Straight, is very much like that. They take kids that are already getting into a lot of trouble. They've already stepped over that line. They're incorrigible. The parents can't get through to them. And I would have to say probably 75%, about three-quarters of the kids that go through the program are permanently changed. They don't get in trouble. They get back to school. Their grades go up. They get involved in community projects. I mean, the experience really changes them because they see where they don't want to end up. Before they go there, jail is a big joke. Whatever they hear out on the street, you know, they hear people talking, you know, other criminals. They hear them talking about having street cred, and jail is no big deal. And then this program they have, and it's in many states throughout the country now, and it spun off of that show from like 30 years ago. There was that documentary done called Scared Straight, and now this is the Scared Straight program. And not every kid is impacted by it. Some are just too far gone. But I would say a good three-quarters of the kids respond to the program. They don't like what they see in jail. They don't. It's scarier than they thought it was. It's harder than they thought it was. The lack of having a TV and being able to wear different clothes and being able to choose the food they eat, all of a sudden all that hits them. That this is the reality of it, that it's not, like, tough. It doesn't give you street cred. It just is really a lousy, scary experience. And a lot of them are, in fact, scared straight once they see the reality behind being incarcerated. And, you know, and like I said, I've watched the show, and they always, at the end, they give, like, what's happening with the kids. And every now and then you have that one kid that ends up back there. It just doesn't impact them. But the vast majority of them, it completely turns them around. These girls, I remember the one I was so impressed with, these girls were always fighting, these three girls, and all three of them got thrown in jail, or got thrown into this program as a precursor to going to jail because they were just always fighting. And when they got out, this girl was so affected by it. She was just petrified the whole time she was in there. Big mouth, too, before she entered the program. The big mouth, she acted like she was fearless. And she ended up getting involved in community programs. She literally, inside of one semester, went from failing to being a straight-A student. She just threw herself in her. She wanted to make sure she was as far away from ever going there again and became a really – well, she didn't become a different person. She started living up to her potential. And if people would understand that every single child, every single person has the potential – to live a life of contribution and a life of just, you know, a good life, it doesn't matter what their aspirations are, you know. And this girl really dug deep inside and figured out what she wanted to do with her life and started doing community, like volunteering at first. And that's the one that impressed me the most. Although there were other stories that were also very good and impressive, but that one girl just stuck with me because she really went from extreme to extreme, and it was seeing that consequence that turned her around.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's really the happy ending to the story. It's like I'm saying, if you can teach a child that it hurts to be burnt, that's a euphemism. If you can teach a child that it hurts to be burnt, then you usually are a couple steps ahead of the game. If you cannot do that, if you cannot make that child understand the reasoning behind not doing things wrong, then you usually have other problems. So
right.
It is, you know, I used that, you know, years ago, there were radiators in houses. Do you remember radiators, Shelley? To keep a house warm.
I got badly injured on a radiator in a house when I was little. So yeah, I remember. I grew up in houses that had radiators in them.
Mhm. And that is how a lot of kids learned. And I realize I'm using it, like I said, as a euphemism. But the point of fact is that if you tell somebody not to touch something or not to do something, they're going to get hurt. That's a quick way for them to learn. My little brother waffled his whole butt side on the radiator, playing around the radiator, up on the chair, and then sliding down between the chair and the radiator and burning the whole back of his leg. And Barbara started to learn how to crawl. In the old days, if an oven was on, the door was hot as hell. They've come along with thermalizing, if that's a word, the oven door. And you can feel the heat, but it doesn't burn.
Insulating, I think, is the word you're looking for.
What's the word I'm looking for?
Insulating.
Yeah. Okay. Thermalizing. I like thermalizing.
Yeah, I like it too. You're probably going to get some text messages that actually is a word, by the way, because it does sound kind of cool.
It is what it is, and it's a valuable lesson when anything like that happens to you. It would be nice if it sunk into everybody. It doesn't sink into everybody. But we're down to 4 minutes, so let me first of all, I read off the punishment has several goals: to be a deterrent to crime, which is the point I made about getting burnt, to make the criminal pay for the damage he did, or to make restitution. Restitution today in a court of law is big business, big business. To reform lawbreakers by making them feel remorse for their crime and realize the wrongfulness of their actions so they won't want to do it again. Obviously, those are the goals, and that's why the legal system was set up originally. But, of course, now it has so many entities and so many long-reaching tentacles that a lot of it, you can't see the forest for the trees. Boy, there's like about six different analogies right there that everybody can sort through. But the point is that it's our goal when we set up anything like that, whether we're talking about being parents or teachers or a boss at a job, to make sure that everybody does things that are safe, productive, and good, harmless. You don't hurt somebody else to accomplish something.
Right.
The last
two statements that you just made about making restitution and making the person remorseful so they don't want to do the action again, that can be used in simple bullying without it having to be a criminal act. Is that, like, especially among siblings or among, you know, school kids, you know, first of all, the child should apologize to the other child, you know, whoever was the more of aggressor, you know, in a sincere way. What you have to do before you ask them to apologize, you have to get them to understand what they're doing. I just went through this with my niece and nephew. They were kind of, they're siblings, and they were kind of being mean to each other. And I told both of them, I said, you know what? I said, I really love both you guys, and it hurts my feelings when you don't treat each other. I said, don't you guys love each other? I kind of, you know, took from you and from Izzy. And they're both like, well, we love each other. And I said, well, then don't be mean like that to each other. It's not nice. I said, and I made them apologize to each other. And they did, and they were in a better mood for the next hour, you know. So that can be some sort of restitution. Sometimes it's just saying, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to hurt your feelings, and that kind of inspires that kind of not wanting to be mean again.
So I want to say, well, and that, of course, that sounds just like me, so I'm not going to argue any of those points with you because that's exactly what I would have done, and I still do. I just had my adult children all had a little dissertation with each other over something so silly. I just looked at them and, you know, I looked at them and I said, what the hell? I said, don't you guys love each other anymore? Well, of course we do. And I said, then, for God's sake, get over it. So it is what it is. So one thing I want to leave everybody thinking with, and that is all this talk that we're doing about making restitution, punishment, the fact that you have to know that if you do something wrong, you're going to get burnt, all those things. But I want to leave everybody thinking about this. The punishment should always fit the crime. That's the hardest part. That is hands down the hardest part, because if it's too much, you make somebody feel very evil. If it's not right. enough, you make them feel like they got away. So it truly has to be a good fit for the crime.
Right.
So
right.
put that in your heads. I want y'all to go out and have a great day. It's sunny here in Florida. I hope it's a beautiful day. We'll be back tomorrow, and I want to talk about tomorrow all the good things about some of the natural things for health. And I don't mean like what you can take supplement-wise. I mean about colonics, body scrubs, baking soda baths, sea salt, aqua chi, and some of the electromagnetics that are available to people today to help get their health in a better place. So
good.
We'll be back tomorrow. Everybody have a great day. God bless. Bye-bye. Thanks, Shel. Talk to you soon, honey.
Thanks, Reen. Have a wonderful day, everyone.